This is Behind the Lens, a podcast from The Lens, New Orleans' first nonprofit, nonpartisan public interest newsroom. I'm Carolyn Heldman. On this week's episode, a story published recently in the British news outlet The Guardian rocketed around the city. The title, Point of No Return, suggested that New Orleans citizens should begin relocating immediately due to the imminent threat of sea level rise. The article has resulted in much discourse on how to respond to the latest scientific study published by the science journal Nature Sustainability, but also on what it means to live in a city that's under siege, not only by the seas and the science, but also by some of the public who are calling for mass migration. One public policy expert argues that while the recent headlines point to disaster, the worst-case scenarios are not certainties. The second part of our discussion coming up today on Behind the Lens. My guest this week on Behind the Lens, clean water, air, climate, and coastal restoration public policy expert Steve Cochran, journalist and author Ned Randolph, who investigates intersections of power, social justice, and the environment, editor of The Lens, Katie Rechtall, and photojournalist and reporter Gus Bennett. Let us talk about oil and gas and the doubling down, tripling down of our government, not just in the state of Louisiana, but in the country, to oil and gas exploration, and what the effects are.
Well, the legislature, I think as we speak, the Senate is about to approve a bill to legally enshrine the oil and gas industry from culpability and climate change. There are bills this session to boost wood pellet manufacturing. There are bills to decrease severance taxes, royalties on state lands. Natural gas is a clean energy. That was last year or the year before. It's almost kind of farcical. When you think about Louisiana's unique vulnerability to sea level rise and the embrace of continuing fossil fuel production, LNG plants, data centers that require, one data center that requires 10 natural gas utility plants, those cause emissions, right? And that's increasing our own vulnerability as well as everyone else's. And so that in of itself is problematic. I do think also that this idea of for all its benefits, part of the master plan is to sustain the working coast of Louisiana, which sort of takes some, it really marries our restoration efforts with continued oil and gas extraction, the Gomesa, which pays for restoration projects. I think we really need to decouple that and start thinking about and reprioritizing what sustainability is in Louisiana. And I don't think it's sustaining extractive industries that are more and more automated that also don't really pay their taxes because they all get this industrial tax exemption. So they're avoiding billions of dollars in taxes, which could fund restoration projects and some of the more expensive and experimental efforts that really need to be looked at. So,
okay. Well, this is a perfect segue into the social aspects of this, because I think even with different science, if you look at 2.7 cubic feet or level rises, different analyses of what may happen, I don't think there's any question that the sea level is rising and the subsidence is happening, and so how fast it happens is some in our control, somewhat in our control, and somewhat not. But what it really means are coastal communities losing the land on which they sit, people having to move. And the call, I think the most extreme example of I don't know the hysteria that was associated with the publication of that article in The Guardian, because it brings up a lot of really important questions about a city that has an identity and a call for it. It sounded like in that article, they were really just suggesting that New Orleans just up and move. And there's so much involved in that that I think we should discuss. And Katie and Gus, I'd like your voices in here too, about what that means when you have people around the world suggesting that New Orleans and New Orleanians should just depart before the sea swallows it up.
Well, I think that the Guardian headline, you know, was made to get readership, right? But it was sort of henny penny in a headline, right? It was very much ready, making you be worried the moment you saw it. So I think that that's what I would start with. But the other thing is that we know from our experience with Katrina that there are weak dams and coastal cities all around the United States and in the world that are also at risk. And to put New Orleans in that spotlight felt unfair, I think, to local people. And I understand that New Orleans may be the most precarious, but I think we have scientists here who can speak to whether that level of emergency was needed.
I would piggyback that also. Immediately when we posted the story, within the first 30 minutes, I knew it was going to be a major story. And we tracked it. Katie asked me, what do you think the numbers are going to be like tomorrow? And I said, well, it's going to clock in around 12,000. And sure enough, when we woke up, it was at 12,000 views. As of today, it's about 19,000. I checked about an hour ago. It's about 19,000.
That was Christopher Ard's response to the original, right? Yeah.
Yes. The response to that piece. And so I knew folks were interested in the piece. And a lot of folks started sending me messages from Houston, because I stayed in Houston right after Katrina. And their biggest fear wasn't about storms destroying the city. Their biggest concern was faulty management, faulty construction, everything. When we go back to Betsy, Katrina, and every other storm, people believe that it wasn't the storm that did us in. It was the construction of these levees and everything else. And they always look at that as the root cause of the water coming in. And so the one thing I can say about New Orleans, folks are not concerned about a storm coming in and taking the city away. The city is going to be here. They're going to build higher. They're going to celebrate higher. Whatever they have to do to keep the city alive. But the numbers did show us that there's a deep interest in this particular subject because the story took off like a rocket. The response was tremendous. I mean, I'm still getting messages, hey, Gus, when are you going to leave? And my answer is the same like everybody else. I'm not leaving. I'll just get my canoe and floating on the water. I'm not leaving the city, because we know there are places like that was mentioned in the story. There are places, you think New York is going to get up and leave? You think Miami is going to get up and leave? They're going to solve the problem. Unfortunately, there will be solutions to many of these problems. And I think one of the biggest concerns with me, we're warning the citizens. That seemed like it was a warning to the citizens, but big businesses are still coming to Louisiana. I mean, they have no fear that we're going to be underwater. They're still coming. They're still building. Data centers are still coming. Oil and gas is still coming. So it's a big, big story. But I think culture is going to keep this city alive and well. It's a really, really interesting topic to fully compress and fully digest in one conversation, one podcast. But I've been here all my life, and I can tell you, for one, I'm not leaving. Even if the threat was next week, hey, the city's going to flood next week, well, I'll stay. I'm not leaving. New Orleans is that kind of city where we're not going anywhere.
Mass migration due to climate change globally is in the future. When you look hundreds of years down the road, it occurs now due to war, famine. You know, things happen and people have to leave.
Employment. This city will empty quicker with employment issues than anything else because there's no money here.
Well, right. It already was population never rebounded after Katrina. Is that right, Katie?
Yeah. I mean, basically, we have a little bump here and there, but then it receded again.
I'd like to make a point that one of the reasons it is suggesting that we should go is because this is a city and a state that already has out migration. And so that is suggesting that it would be easier, this sort of, you know, dramatic emergency option would be easier here than other places, which really doesn't sit well with the people that are here. And that, you know, I don't want to pile on to the authors of this study because they live here too, but it does make a very peculiar social argument. And I think it was a matter of time before a report like this came out, and I don't think it's going to be the last one. So if anything, we're starting that conversation about, worst case scenario, everybody abandons the city. Well, we're not going to do that. So what are we going to do?
This is Behind the Lens. I'm Carolyn Heldman. My guest this week, clean water, air, climate, and coastal restoration public policy expert Steve Cochran, journalist, author, and PhD Ned Randolph, who investigates intersections of power, social justice, and the environment, photojournalist and reporter for The Lens, Gus Bennett, and editor of The Lens, Katie Rechdahl.
Hi, I'm Karen Gadbois, the co-founder and executive director of The Lens. The Lens is the New Orleans area's first nonprofit, nonpartisan public interest newsroom dedicated to unique investigative and explanatory journalism. The strength of The Lens lies in the highly qualified editorial and research staff, as well as a collaborative network of affiliated organizations. Please make a tax-deductible donation to support our work at thelensnola.org/donate. Thank you.
You know, I've covered Île de Jean Charles kind of extensively over the years. It's a place down on the coast. I've been on the island when you had to either choose to get across that bridge and barely be able to see where the bridge is. And that's at, you know, during a storm. It's scary to be driving on the water, hoping that the bridge stays visible as you're driving across. It's scary. And that happened with every storm at Île de Jean Charles, and sometimes even with high tide, depending on what was going on. So that area is so gorgeous. You know, you can go out, you can get your shrimp for dinner, fish off the coast. Like, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful spot, but it's gone down so much because of everything that we're talking about. It used to be a wooded area. It's now flat and the water just washes across it. When they finally started to move people off of there, the Louisiana government has leased, or I don't know what the real estate arrangement is, but there are all these camps that are there now. And so it's become a place where people who are not of similar culture, they're not native, they're not black, they're not, are coming in and enjoying this gorgeous space in a way that everybody in the island feels like, oh, this is what it was about. They were trying to buy us out so they could have our beautiful land. That is at the root, I think, of all of this move out right now, people think, well, okay, so who's going to take our beautiful city? There will be people who will do that no matter when the move out starts. And I don't mean to sound skeptical or jaded, but I saw it happen with Ilda Don Charles, and I went out there. Suddenly the road that I used to have to creak across has big rocks next to it, protecting all the fishermen who are coming out to their camps. We could have done that before too. So it makes me wonder, okay, what's the will of the government? Are they, if they're there to protect the people coming out to the camps, could they have protected the people who had lived there when they were living there? And the same thing goes with the city. Okay, so I'm sure that if people started to heed this, there would be people who would come in and take advantage of our land, but there would also be people who would find ways to protect those people in a different kind of way. That's what it seems like. The suspicion is like, oh, wait a minute, you're telling us all to leave the city. Why? Conspiracy theory is alive and well, and we've seen it before, and I don't know if that makes any sense to you, but when I watched it happen to Ilda Don Charles, at first people were saying, the residents were saying, well, who's going to take our land? You know, they packed up their little fishing nets and went to a high water place where there was supposed to be water, and the state ended up not being able to put water there. So they're sitting there on dry land, unhappy, and then people are in their land. It's hard to see.
I was going to offer maybe a slightly different take, but one of which is I remember after Katrina, the French Quarter was going to be bought up by Disneyland. I was a thing, man. That was a lot of talk about that, right? And it didn't. And right. It's because people went, no, you're not doing that. We're staying, right? So there is a hardiness to, you know, you get tired of being told that we're good at recovering, that we're, you know, that we can, you know, and you're like, well, how about we get to quit doing that, right? That's not a goal for life, to be able to respond every time something bad happens. But I do think that the sort of the broader trends, we live in a time of enormous social and economic change, way more than any that's occurred in my lifetime. And I'm 73 now, so I've got some mileage here. And that itself is both really, really scary, and you see people responding to it in negative ways and positive ways. But you also, it's also times for opportunities. The idea that what's going to happen is climate change is we are either going to make the transition to cleaner, more responsible forms of energy, or we're not. And that's a global decision. Louisiana will or won't make that. Louisiana is completely classically captured by a status quo politics and a status quo economy. And we have to try to, those of us who are involved politically have to try to change that. But those movements are going to be global as well. And I'm a little bit more comfortable that the rest of the world is actually trying to move in the right direction there, and we'll get drug along with it than I am that Louisiana is missing this enormous opportunity to lead there. And because of the work that we were doing on coastal work, which really was leading the world until we started the backslide that we're doing right now, as well as beginning to move towards the transitional solar and wind. There were lease, you know, going up in the coast. There's a large solar facility now outside of Lafayette. There are others, and a lot of more specific local generation that's going on in New Orleans, which is a wonderful trend. There are lots of things that we could build on to help tell the story of Louisiana better, to make people feel more hopeful that the city can respond and remain. But those are the things that, to me, that we have to be doing that look at the larger trends that we're all being impacted by, and take advantage of those rather than doubling down, as I think the term that you use, on these old, tired ways of doing things that are guaranteed to run out. And if you didn't worry about oil and gas, just the current moment of time, when because somebody put a thumb in the dike and we couldn't move boats through a little part of the world, we're all nuts, right? Everybody's going crazy. Oh my God, what are we going to do? Well, how about we don't depend on that? I mean, you know, that's not a bad idea. And look who's doing that better, China. You want to compete in the world? Look at what China's doing. 60% of their vehicles are EVs now. they're not so worried about gas because they don't have to have gas. You know, there's ways to do this, but we have to be more thoughtful about how we're dealing with the world. The current administration is not doing that. That's unfortunate. But we're still here, and there's elections every few years, and we really have to take advantage of that. So anyway, sorry for the speech, but that, like, come on, man, let's go.
Anyway. No, that's how I end everything with, you know, there's an election coming up. There's always an election coming up. And in response to the Strait of Hormuz and this spike in oil and gas and gas prices at the pump right now, EV sales are through the roof in the United States. All it takes is a little discomfort, right? And people start to make some decisions. I'm considering...
You guys drive EVs? You drive EVs, all of you?
I have a Prius, but not an EV.
No, I'd like to have one. I have my mother-in-law's old car.
I actually have... I've been in the hybrid world, but I have not gone to an EV, even though I want to, because the larger vehicle that we have would be an EV. And I need that in case I have to get out for a storm. And because the building that we began to do about actually having charging stations in a useful way all along the highways, we've backed off on that. And so that slowed me down in that purchase. Those are the kind of decisions that, you know, down here, that actually matters. I don't have the confidence that I'd want to have that I could be safe in an EV with my family. And so I'm not yet ready to do that, but I really want to do it. I just like that thing down here, right?
Range anxiety is real.
Yeah, legit.
I think one thing the report really shows is that, like, the status quo is unsustainable, you know. And I think that really, to sort of just jump from what Steve said, you know, the tired old ideas aren't working. And so, you know, maybe this is the future of our current status quo that we really drastically need to change.
I love that. That's a nice, optimistic way to end it. I would also say that along the lines of Disney buying the French Quarter, these just crazy ideas, Saudi Arabia, I think, has a dome in which there is skiing. So where there is money, there is a way to... New Orleans will never go away. There will be a system of dikes. There will be a... It'll happen because money will protect it. It's too precious.
I just wish we didn't give so much of our taxes away. You know, we're about to give away all of our taxes to, you know, Elon Musk's company to come to Vermilion Parish. We give our taxes away to LNG plants. We do have a provision in the books that oil and gas companies have to refill canals. Section 705, but they don't, it's not enforced. They don't do it. We have a lawsuit that is, you know, jumps around from state to federal court to hold oil and, you know, to hold these oil and gas companies accountable. There's money on the table to do these things.
In front of the Supreme Court right now.
No, it actually came back. The Supreme Court kicked it back to state court.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it state or federal?
I'm sorry, federal court. Correct.
Oh, that's the death knell, probably.
Well, that's what the oil and gas companies want, so that's probably not good for Louisiana.
Yep. Okay. Well, darn, I wanted to end on an optimistic note. Who has one?
Well, I don't know. You know, driving on the coast, as much as I had my conspiracy theories fueled down there, I also saw, you know, you have people living on houses on 20-foot pillars or whatever they're called. There's a way of staying in place for a long time if you look at that model. I'm not sure we want to live in a city on pillars, but I guess it's been done before, right?
Well, people have looked at Venice as a kind of a model where you have canals and where your transportation changes and things like that. I mean, I think there are a lot of things to think about. That probably the value of an article like that is that maybe it does spark more thinking in those directions, right? That's a useful way to spend time and investment of, like, all right, we do have a problem. Let's figure out how to do the things that we can do. That's sort of where I am these days, because I'm focused on the coastal program, but how should we think more broadly about where we are and how we make sure we can be here, given the realities that we face? Because we do face realities that Kansas doesn't face. They got their own problems with tornadoes. I mean, you know, that's not, you don't get to move that easily. So anyway.
Yeah, and it's our kids and our grandkids that are going to be dealing with it more than us, probably. So let's hope their innovation and ingenuity protect them. All right, all. Thank you so much for your time and your expertise, your thoughts. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you, guys.
Thanks so much for having this discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. See ya. You're listening to Behind the Lens, a podcast from The Lens. This week's episode, a local response to a story recently published in the British news outlet, The Guardian, titled The Point of No Return. The article suggests that New Orleans citizens need to begin relocating immediately due to the imminent threat of sea level rise. My guests are Steve Cochran. He spent most of his professional life working on public policy, advocating for progress on clean water, clean air, climate, and coastal restoration and protection. He served as the first executive director of the Lake Pontchartrain Basin Foundation and director of Restore the Mississippi River Delta. Ned Randolph, PhD, is a journalist and teacher who investigates intersections of power, social justice, and the environment. He's the author of Muddy Thinking in the Mississippi River Valley. Photojournalist and reporter and lifelong New Orleanian, Gus Bennett, and editor of The Lens, Katie Rechtall. You can read all the week's other news plus opinions at our website, thelensnola.org. I'm Carolyn Heldman. Thanks for listening.